Our first guest, Dr. Genevieve Bell, is an Australian who lives in the United States, and she's just finishing up a term as a thinker-in-residence in South Australia, as I mentioned earlier. Now, her field of interest as an anthropologist is in the importance of culture in the adoption and adaption of technology, a theme which we've touched on quite a bit in recent programs. When she's in the States, she works for Intel Corporation, the giant technology company, and she's their Director of User Experience. So let's find out what that means.
When Intel hired me 10 years ago, it was a period when personal computers were first moving out of offices and into people's homes in real numbers. And I think there was a great deal of concern in the technology industry broadly and at Intel specifically about what was going to happen to those PCs when they got into people's homes. And part of the company's response to that was to hire a range of different kinds of social scientists, anthropologists, but also cognitive psychologists, to really try and get a sense of what people were going to do with those computers. And over the last 10 years, I think Intel's interest in what people would do with those computers has morphed from a challenge about, oh God, we don't know what's going to happen, to if we actually work out what people care about and what they value, we can use that as a starting point for innovating new technology. And really, that's mostly what my role is today. I'm responsible for helping Intel think about what future uses and usages of technology might be, specifically in the consumer electronics realm.
Now, corporations like Intel are primarily motivated by profit. What do you get out of this, though? As a cultural anthropologist, I presume you're interested more than just scouting out new potential markets for Intel products.
No, absolutely. Clearly, one of the reasons that's kept me at Intel and one of the reasons that's kept me committed to this kind of work is the opportunity to develop technology that matters. I think one of the big transitions that companies in the technology industry, both in mobile phones and other technologies, have really gone through in the last 10 or 15 years is to start to have to build technology that really speaks to people. It's not enough anymore that it be shiny and flashy and have blinky lights and be the latest, coolest thing. It also has to do something people care about. And for me, getting that right, creating technology that matters, creating a company that thinks about where their technology might end up and who cares about the consequences was really important for me.
Is this an ongoing battle? I mean, in a sense, do you have to keep reminding, corporations, people in corporations, to look at the human component? You know, is that often forgotten of when they're talking about technological development?
I think one of the things I'm most proud of in my tenure at Intel has been changing the shape of the conversation. I think when I joined Intel, it was quite common to say, I've built this thing, now tell me how to sell it, which was the first point at which users really came into the conversation. And I think one of the transitions my colleagues and I have really helped shepherd at Intel is one that moved from, here's the thing, now how do we sell it, to what's the experience we want to enable? And then let's think about what technology makes that possible. And of course, it's always an ongoing battle. And I think that's not surprising. There's always a tension between needing to get something into the marketplace, needing to be profitable, needing to make technological breakthroughs, but also do things that are satisfying.
Now, you've just spent time on a field trip in rural South Australia. Could you tell us about that?
This has been one of the great pleasures of my life recently. So for the last 6 months, but really the last two in particular, I have been South Australia's 15th Thinker-in-Residence, which is a program started by Premier Rann about 4 or 5 years ago, designed to bring out-of-the-box thinkers from outside Australia back into Australia, and specifically into South Australia, to help address the problems and critical concerns and issues for the state moving forward. And I was asked to come and help think about what the future of technology might be for South Australia. And for me, answering that question involves spending my time doing fieldwork and talking to people in South Australia. I think I clocked about 13,000 kilometres in 6 weeks. I visited 45 different communities ranging in size from the 5 people in William Creek to many people in places like Adelaide, but also in Port Augusta, Whyalla, Ceduna, Murray Bridge, Berry, Loxton, Renmark, Cooper Pedy, Woomera, the APY lands, and last but by no means least, places like Andamooka and Tarawi and Oruru.
And what were you looking for in terms of that sort of assessment of their technology?
Well, I was always looking for a good pie shop and a decent cup of coffee. And once I got past those sort of immediate needs, I was really trying to get a sense of what it was that people were doing in their lives with technology. And it became increasingly clear as I worked through this project that asking people about the technology in their lives was really just about asking them about their lives. And this project took place against the backdrop of a global economic crisis that's had real impact in South Australia and a drought that is increasingly impacting lives across the state. So people were very concerned about their futures, worried about their families and their communities and their kids and their businesses. And really talking about technology meant talking about all of those things.
I guess in one sense we have a tendency to look for commonalities in communities, and that's probably a good thing for the most part. But from the field trips that you've done over the years, not just here in Australia but elsewhere, how much difference is there in the way that people view and use new technology?
There are some remarkable differences globally about people's relationships to technology, and it's not just about the way they use them, it's about the way they think about them. It's about the way they respond to them emotionally. It's even about the kind of conceptual frameworks they have for making sense of those technologies. So even within South Australia, I've been really struck by these two kind of very different conceptual models that people have about their relationships to technology. I've talked to a number of people who refer to things like Twitter and Flickr and YouTube and MySpace and Facebook and Bebo and their even old-fashioned email accounts as their vital signs, and talk about needing to check them regularly. This kind of, I need to just check my vital signs, sort of to know that they're still ticking over in the world. I've also run across a whole different group of people who, exemplified by one wonderful man down in Malang on the Lower Lakes in South Australia, who said to me, he said, sometimes it just feels like life's overheads are increasing. He meant that he now has to balance more bills and more devices and more services and plans and information that's on different devices that don't speak to each other. And I was really struck by the fact that even in a small state like South Australia, small in terms of population, there were two very different ways of thinking about the relationship between oneself and technology. And I think when you start to expand the lens and move globally, you find an even wider range of different kinds of ways that we relate to and make sense of technology.
How will the information that you've gathered there, I mean, how will that type of information feed back to what you're doing in Intel?
Well, in a couple of ways. One, it's been a long time since I've had 2 months to do fieldwork, so I've had a chance to try out some new research methods, and I think I will take some of those back now that I know the ones that work and don't. We certainly, on this project, it was the first time I've tried to use social networking technology, so Web 2.0 tools in particular, as a research tool. I ran a blog soliciting feedback from South Australians and stories about their relationships with technology. And that's actually been a surprisingly nice research tool. People have given all kinds of feedback. We have continued to have dialogues online. And I'll certainly think about how I incorporate that back into my research at Intel. And I think insofar as one of the things that became very clear to me in this trip has been about the reliability and robustness of technology, I go back emboldened to have to raise that question one more time. I think I've just been incredibly struck as I've spent my time both actually in Adelaide and around the state by the fact that the biggest problem with technology is technology itself. It's in some ways not well designed to be in our living rooms and our sheds and our cars and our backpacks and our schools, and that the frailties of it continue to impede our successes. And that we have a long way to go in terms of either creating technology that's robust enough that it never needs to be repaired, or capability building so that we have people who know how to repair it. And I know the piece of that equation I can help solve.
Well, Dr. Genevieve Bell, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
And if you want to find out more about South Australia's Thinker in Residence program, just go to our website and click on the link.